Hi, this is Steve Wick, president of DriveThruRPG, and you're listening to Morris's unofficial tabletop RPG talk.
This week, Morris, PJ, and Jessica bring you up to date with all the tabletop RPG news, including a free adventure from D&D Beyond, the tabletop gaming industry heads to a downturn, Hasbro's AI plans, a new Dungeons & Dragons novel, and more, plus a brand new sketch about helping a ghost with unfinished business. This week on Morris's unofficial tabletop RPG talk.
This podcast is sponsored by Orange Pinafore, the most convenient meal delivery service in town. Simply sign up for 13 groats a week, and Orange Pinafore will deliver the ingredients for a range of delicious meals straight to your door, including Lamba's bread. Ugh, why do elves have such tedious food? Worm sandwiches, xenomorph eggs, weasel tongue. Ooh, I assure you, that is delicious. Maggot cheese, roasted peacock, and Marmite-flavored ice cream. Delicious.
All the tabletop role-playing news. We aim to amuse and we aim to enthuse. And Morris's unofficial tabletop RPG.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Morris's unofficial tabletop RPG talk. I am Russ, a.k.a. Morris, or Morris, a.k.a. Russ, and with me this week is...
PJ Coffey from the Southampton Guild of Role Players. Russ, as ever, it is a delight to be here. And joining us now, we have the amazing company of the extremely well-known, by me anyway, Jessica Hancock.
Yes, thank you. It's me, Jessica, from EN Publishing. I don't think I'm extremely well known, but
extremely well known in this room.
In the room I'm in, which is my office by myself. Yes.
There we go.
You are known by 100% of the people
in the room. Mm. Well, the people that I know are here. Like, but you know.
Mm. Anyway.
Okay.
So we're just talking just before.
Sorry, I'll have to try that with better introduction.
No, it was good. I like it. I always enjoy your introductions. I look forward to them every week because I never know what's going to happen. And I feel, PJ, you feel the same way.
Yep, pretty much. Like, old random conversation generator not kicking in today.
Whoop, whoop. Mm. All right.
So, have we got any news? Inquire.
Yes, we have some news. It has been a quietish week, but there is news this week.
Yeah.
It's all very, very, very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's quite exciting.
I mean, I am super sure.
I'm excited to know. Yeah, but I think it's just because obviously in the UK and the US, a lot of people take time off around Easter weekend because in the UK we have Friday and Monday off work as bank holidays traditionally. So I think a lot of UK and US publishers aren't putting stuff out this week because they're like, oh, everyone's going to be busy with that.
Possibly. I do not know. But I do know that ICV2 has published a report on the hobby games industry in 2023.
Interesting. Ooh, I have not read this.
That is a thing. What I do know.
Can you tell me about it? Because I do not know these things.
I will tell you. So, 2023 was apparently a tough year for hobby game sales.
Oh.
It was not a good year. So, this is the US and Canada market.
Okay.
Yep.
And this reflects the hobby game sales channel. So that's kind of friendly local game stores.
Yeah, yeah.
That sort of thing. Specialist game and card stores, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Board game cafes. You know, that's not Amazon. It's not Walmart. It's not direct sales.
Yeah, yeah.
It is Kickstarter, apparently, as well. They do use Kickstarter figures.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay.
So, do they use other, sorry to interrupt, but do you use other crowdfunding platforms or is it just Kickstarter?
I believe just Kickstarter, but I don't know for sure.
Okay.
I don't know for sure. Mm. But, you know, they do these sort of like quarterly reports.
Mm.
Anyway, this was a look back at the whole of 2023. So typically, over the last sort of, I don't know, sort of 10, 15 years or so, every year it's been like, oh, right, the hobby games industry has grown by 10%, 15%, 30%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been... this sort of fairly constant meteoric rise over the last sort of 10, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in 2023, it was just 1%.
Growth.
And that 1% is less than the rate of inflation.
Ooh, that's concerning.
It was a tough year for hobby game sales. It went from 2.86 billion, 2. Yeah, 2.86 billion in 2022 to 2.89 billion in 2023. So, you know, it was a tiny, relatively tiny, it's a lot of money, obviously, but relatively tiny percentage increase there.
It's not what the shareholders want to hear, Russ.
Yeah, that is the, that's the smallest growth, like, since I've been reporting on this. Generally, it ranges between 10 and 30% growth.
Right. So has the market reached saturation?
Well, yeah, possibly. I don't know. I mean, they divide it down into various categories. There's collectibles, there's miniatures, board games, card games, and role-playing games. That's the hobby games market.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So only two categories grew in 2023.
Ooh.
Okay.
Those were collectibles and miniatures.
Oh,
interesting.
Wow.
So board games, card games, and most importantly for us, role-playing games, were all down.
Wow.
And not only that, Dungeons & Dragons specifically dropped by
30%. Ooh. Wow, that's a big drop.
Yeah.
Do we think that's just indicative of the market of TTRPGs as a whole? Or do you think that OGL last year frittered some people away into other areas of the TTRPG space?
So they did touch on this. So this is kind of... The way they do this, they do sort of these big mass surveys. They talk to distributors, they talk to retailers, they talk to, you know, loads of different people. So what they are saying is they are citing the impending new edition as being one reason for that. Lackluster movie performance.
Oh, fair. Didn't get that many people seeing
it. The tail end of a pandemic-fueled high.
Yes, that's true.
But they also do touch on the OGL crisis.
Okay.
And they said that while the OGL crisis did impact like a minority of some lifestyle gamers, like newer players as a whole were kind of oblivious to the situation.
Yeah.
Fair enough, yeah.
So it didn't impact them. And I think that kind of matches what I suppose shareholder call said.
Yeah.
Late last year, it's like the OGL situation didn't really impact them.
Yeah.
The other important element that they did mention was D&D's increasing move to digital, which means it's impacting retail sales at hobby stores.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily that D&D's selling less, it's just that where D&D's being bought has moved.
So that means they've got more control over the products being offered, like, it's entirely predictable, and it's something that we've been saying on this podcast for at least four years.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah, this is what they're trying to do, this is where you're going.
Mm.
And you know what? A shocking display of events, the obvious business sense is which way they're going for. So.
Yeah. They also said that older D&D players are migrating to other games.
Mm-hmm.
Is that us?
Pathfinder being one of the major beneficiaries, but plenty of other games as well.
Yeah.
So I don't know, when they say older D&D players, I don't know whether they mean D&D players who are older or D&D players who have been playing for a few years. So do they mean sort of like D&D players in their 50s and 60s, or do they mean D&D players who have been playing D&D for like 5 or 7 years and are now kind of, you know, I'm not sure what they mean by that.
I mean, older D&D players could, in a very realistic sense, include people over the age of 25.
Well, yeah, it could. Yeah, they don't say where they. Yeah, they don't define it, so it's hard to tell.
Okay, anyone over the age of 25 is hideously old, really, and no longer relevant. So,
I don't know. I feel great.
It's my birthday tomorrow. So I'm turning 25, obviously.
You're 25, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you.
They got the top hobby channel TTRPGs list for 2023.
Oh.
The top 10 most popular games in the hobby channel. Again, remember, it's just the hobby channel, just the local game stores. It's not Amazon, it's not direct sales, it's not Walmart, or anything like that. I mean, you can probably guess what the top two are.
5th edition and Pathfinder 2nd edition.
Yeah, D&D and then Pathfinder, of course. As always, we then have Cyberpunk Red coming in at number 3.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
We have World of Darkness coming in at number 4.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah.
Make you come back.
Starfinder at number 5.
Well, that makes sense because they did a remastered of it, didn't they? And some new stuff. Yeah.
Warhammer 40K.
Yeah.
Cube Pool 7 in at 6. Nice. Marvel Multiverse Roleplaying is in at 7.
Oh, that Marvel cachet.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. Kobold 5e Books.
Oh, then Kobold Press.
Third party, yeah.
How? Oh, okay. I suppose it's Kickstarter that would include.
Yeah, and also they've got a retail presence as well. So
so will that be Kerbal Farming?
Yeah. Is that not Tales of the Valiant and the such?
No, this would have been 2023, so probably it predates Tales of the Valiant stuff. It's probably their monster books and stuff like that, I would have thought.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I would have thought. And at number 9, we've got Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Good work.
And at number 10, we've got Pirate Borg from Free League.
Oh, yeah, I've got that. I mean, it looks fun, and it's quite pretty. I imagine it's the kind of thing at a retail store you look at and go, this looks interesting, because it does look graphically very cool and different, and
So that's the industry news there. That is what is happening.
Mm.
I don't know. 30% seemed like a lot. I wouldn't have been surprised to see a D&D drop with the new edition and with the move to digital.
Yeah.
30 seems high, but, you know, that's what the figures say. That's what the figures say, I guess.
Mm.
I wonder if that will bounce back after the new edition. So I'm saying new edition now, because that's the way that ICB2 wrote about it. Yeah,
I support you in that phrasing.
I'm sure they'd be very upset, but Wizards of the Coast.
Well, they make a point to remind everybody, like, basically weekly now, that it's not a new edition. So, you know, pretty much everything they say has that mentioned in there.
I think the reason I'm saying that is because I haven't been given a phrase to reuse. Like, Pathfinder used the term remastered, and so that's easy for me to say the remastered edition. Like, I'm like, yeah, fine.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like, unless I've missed it.
They're just calling them the 2024 core rulebooks, aren't they?
Yeah, which is too long. I don't have time to say all the words, you know? Like, that's too much, man. So if they gave me an alternative phrase, I would happily use it.
Yeah. Dungeons and Dragons Revisited.
Yeah. True. Like, I don't really care what it is, but if they said that, you know,
when they were using 1D&D,
we printed.
That was something you could refer to it as.
Yeah. Like,
1D&D, that sounds like an exciting new edition.
Well, I suppose so. It sounds edition-y, doesn't
they,
it?
They dropped that really quickly.
Yeah.
D&D Next.
Yeah.
That was how they talked about it before, so yeah.
But anyway,
D&D Next was for 5e, wasn't it? But anyway. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see what happens.
Mm.
Yeah,
I think
5.1, 5.2, 5.3. You can say.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know exactly how different it's going to be yet. We've seen some playtest stuff, but I don't think we've seen anywhere near all of it. So
yeah, it looks.
And we don't know what final decisions that have made it either. So.
It does feel like a 5.5 to me from what we've seen so far. Like, it's still very much 5th edition, but there's like tweaks and changes.
It does feel like that to me. But
it doesn't feel like there's any, that I've seen any huge departures that are like, wow, this is going to fundamentally change the gameplay. Like, it's like lots of little tweaks and changes. But
it feels like a 5.5 to me. But, anyway. Some people get very upset if you say that, and I'm not sure why, but I don't know.
Okay, so
we'll find out, I guess.
But anyway, yeah, if you have an alternative phrase you'd like us to use, please write in and tell us and we can use it.
Yeah, whoever sends us the best phrase, we'll start using it from now on.
Oh, whilst we're on the topic of Dungeons and Dragons and new editions, didn't somebody get in trouble or something? Brendan Lee Mulligan said D&D is combat-oriented.
Not in trouble. So there's been a lot of chat on social media this week. So Brendan Lee Mulligan, who is... Mm.
Dimension 20?
Yeah, Dimension 20. Yeah. They're the dungeon master on there, and they do loads of other nerdy stuff, but they're like a media D&D nerdy person. They do loads of, they do lots of things, but streamer, that's what they're talking about.
That's what
actual play, loads of stuff like that. Right. But they put out, they had an interview where they were talking about Dungeons & Dragons, and there's a full quote but online, but just to paraphrase and summarise it, they said that calling D&D a combat-orientated game is a bit like looking at a stove and saying, this has nothing to do with food. You can't eat metal, so it's not for that.
Huh?
Yes, that was the analogy they're using. So they're saying, I'm going to bring the food, so the food's my favourite part. So D&D has so many combat mechanics. So what he's arguing against is the phrase that people say, D&D has so many combat mechanics, it's destined to tell combat stories, which is kind of something I think and have said. But... Brennan is saying that he fundamentally disagrees with this because he says combat's the part he's least interested in simulating through improvised storytelling. So he likes that D&D gives him the rules to do that, and he's going to bring all the other parts of it. So he says he's going to take care of the emotions, relationships, character progression, because for him that's intuitive. He understands it well. But he doesn't...
talking about himself there. Mm-hmm. Not everybody finds that intuitive and easy to bring to, and especially if you're a new player.
And already we're starting the discussion.
You just look at the book. Why would you even think that that sort of stuff even exists if it's not in the book? You think, oh, this is a game about combat.
But already your reaction.
Already your reaction is similar
to online. So this was said, and a lot of people online have different opinions, and there's been a lot of discussion. So some people have agreed with Brennan, some people have disagreed, but it's created a really interesting discussion online talking about the role of systems in TTRPGs and what they play in different stories. And I think that's really interesting, because I think a lot of people that only play D&D perhaps haven't thought about this topic much before. Because if you always use the same system, like, why would you? And it comes back to a lot of things that I think we've spoken about before a lot. Like, yeah, of course, you can hammer in a nail with a screwdriver if you want and you can make it work. But do you know that a hammer's probably going to make that better for you sometimes? But that said, people can play any tabletop RPG any way they want, as long as everyone at table's having fun agrees.
If you're an experienced gamer, of course you can take a game and do anything you want with it and probably find that easy because you're experienced. But that's not everybody, is it? And if you're a new player and you come and buy these books and you open them up, all you've got is what's presented to you on the page.
Yeah.
Is that
true,
though?
You don't have that wealth of experience to draw on.
I mean, if you're a new gamer, you've opened it up, you're like, oh, and you've never come across any sort of Dungeons and Dragons or the frequent actual plays.
Well, actual plays make a difference, you're right.
I mean, they might say, oh, how do they work it out? And the answer, of course, in the core books is just deal with it. But, I mean, I don't know. I think there's this assumption that people... I would challenge this assumption that people go around reading books. I really love playing game books. Why are you laughing at me? It's true.
I would challenge the assumption that people read books. Is just what a great quote, Arda.
Yeah, I would challenge the assumption that people read TTRPG
books. I'm not laughing because you're wrong. It's a funny thing to say. I'm not booing you. You know, you are right. But it's a funny thing to say.
That's TTRPG books as reference books or as things to read, though. That's different.
I assume PJ was talking about in general. Like, people don't read books.
Well, I mean, I read a lot of books, but I do struggle quite a bit with TTRPG books because, like, they're not my sort of thing. So we need someone who enjoys reading non-fiction books, which are essentially relatively dry technical manuals, and then learning them. So if you've got, like, game designers, just give me the thumbs up there, and probably so. How exciting! Technical manuals to learn.
I mean, they're instruction manuals,
But I do enjoy reading different TTRPG systems. I'm very lucky I get exposed to it so much because of doing the Not D&D podcast, so people send me their PDFs to review. So I get to review along. I think because I'm not a designer for TTRPGs, so I don't think about it in this way, I find it really interesting seeing other people's perspectives on how to run games and different mechanics and systems. So I very much enjoy it from that. But maybe if you are somebody, you know, like you are PJ that does write rules, maybe it's not as interesting to you because you don't need someone else to tell you that. It's similar to what Russ was saying.
I think my job as a designer, my work as a designer and my reading of TTRPG books, I probably read more TTRPG books now that I am, like, you know, interested more in design.
But is that because it's more of a work thing at that point?
To be
then,
fair, while TTRPG, TTRPG books are indeed instruction manuals.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I would say they are more interesting to read than, say, my car's instruction manual or my dishwasher's instruction manual. They're not that bad.
TTRPGs are more interesting than cars.
Have you read either of those?
Of those?
Yeah.
Of course not.
Either your car's instruction manual and your...
Of course not.
You haven't read them.
I have read tabletop RPG books, though.
No, there you go.
Because they are more interesting than those books.
I mean, I would argue that you're kind of in the minority in that respect.
But yeah.
No. I'm just saying.
But bringing it back to what we're talking about before we go too far on tangent so Brennan Lee Mulligan said this in an interview, and a lot of people online have a lot of opinions about it. So if you go onto any social media parts of TTRPG space, you'll probably see conversations about this. And people have different things to say.
I mean, I don't think it's hard to dispute that, like, D&D's page count towards the three pillars of the game, which were supposed to be combat, exploration, and social,
has described combat in a 2017 and after combat.
Yeah.
You'll be delighted
combat
to hear.
Very much does get the lion's share of the page counts. So,
you know what? I'm sort of okay with that because combat is something that does need explaining.
I get that it needs whereas maybe the social, maybe you feel you don't need.
Mm. Well, I think... I think that's what he said.
Yeah, yeah, what he meant. Yeah,
that's what he's saying. Is like, yeah. I can run.
What's it going to say about social? Yeah,
I can run a storytelling game, but the combat bit is a bit I need. And D&D does give you really good combat rules for that. Yeah. For what they're looking, the stories they're looking to tell. Great.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously in the opinion of people on this call, it is a bit of a two-legged stool, because that third one of exploration, some people are like, because you're everything you need for exploration. Whereas my analysis would be you need something more like challenges, you'd need like a little picturesque point, and then you got survival there as well, like sitting there like a goblin hurling scat at you and complaining loudly.
Yeah.
And nobody likes a goblin, but the other two are quite good.
I love a goblin. What are you talking about? I see what this means. I think for a lot of people, in a lot of people's games that they run, D&D does what they need it to do because, like, they want that combat bit, and they're very happy to go off and do their own thing with all the other elements of storytelling they want. But I do think the core thing that they say is that D&D has so many combat mechanics, you're destined to tell combat stories. I really think is very true, because I think game
destined to
mechanics
tell
do influence the stories that you tell. Because, like, the fact that my character in D&D has a high amount of hit points and has these many spell slots and things like that makes me see combat as a viable solution to problem solving a lot of times.
Your character is largely defined by their combat ability.
Yeah.
On the character sheet.
It's always an option for me. I mean, there's so many options to resolve a situation beyond combat, but combat is always sitting on the table. Whereas there are different systems, I'm trying to think of an example really quick and I can't, but there's something that's like, you have 2 hit points and if someone gets you in a fight, you may die from 1 stab. If the system is built that way, that will change the way that you narratively approach combat, because that will be a real last resort with how you want to fight somebody.
The OSR, the old school Renaissance revival, whatever you call it, that is very focused on low hit points and the idea of combat has war, which is get into a fight. Mm-hmm. And if you do so, it's at your absolute 100% peril.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And that changes the way you approach games.
Could be Call of Cthulhu.
And Call of Cthulhu is a great example. Exactly. If you get into a fight with a great elder one, you're not going to win. Like, that's not... No, you can't do that. So that changes the way storytelling is played. And I also think that if you... And there is... You can completely on your own do all those other elements of games, like creating emotions, relationship, progression, but there are so many, like Ross was saying, if you're new to this and you're like, I don't know how to do that on the fly by myself, there's so many systems that do amazing things that tell you that. Like Fate does the great thing when you're setting up your character of making connections between different characters. That's a mechanically built-in thing to give you a reason to do that.
Great. And of course, lots of people do that their session zero anyway, but if you are new to D&D and this is the first thing you've ever seen, you wouldn't know that's
a thing you could do.
Oh, absolutely. There's a whole I mean, that's why there's so much advice out there, like, not all of it, but a lot of it does seem to be saying, well, this system does something cool, take this and help you use it to run your D&D.
I think you're right that live streamed actual plays take up a lot of that slack though, so where the rule books don't spend chapters and chapters talking about how you can have conversations in your game.
Yeah.
Because what are they going to say other than giving advice, I suppose? Actual plays demonstrate people actually doing that, which is, you know, you watch that and that's like, oh, that's how the game is played. That's what a game looks like, sort of thing.
Yeah. But I do think there are mechanics in TTRPGs that create feelings that inform the narrative in lots of different ways, and thinking you can bring it all yourself, I think you'll miss some certain things. Like, you know, for example, playing Dread or something with a Jenga tower, that pulling the thing creates the tension, like by pulling the Jenga block or
Dread's always the go-to example, isn't
it? Because it's just so good at that.
Yeah, it's just but so...
Another great one is like the clocks in Blades in the Dark. That creates stress. Like, there's a mechanic in the game which makes you go, oh, we're under pressure, actually, and what we're doing is... And it creates that feeling that will come through in your narrative and the way you play. And in Ten Candles, the way that you're slowly losing control of the narrative of the game because the dice are being taken away from you. Which,
like the panic stuff in Aliens.
Yeah.
Yeah, and things like that. Yeah.
So I think, and all of those things you could do in D&D without those rule mechanics. You could find other ways to do that. Absolutely. But I just think somebody's spent a lot of time already thinking about a cool way to do this and has tested it. Maybe I'll try that. I don't know. But maybe that's because I'm not as confident in those things as Brennan is. Because Brennan's been running games for a very long time, clearly has their own system and is very comfy and happy in that. So I wasn't mad at seeing them say this because I was like, cool. But
well, no, it's nothing to get mad about. We're getting mad.
Oh yes.
Oh, okay.
On the internet.
Sure, of course, yeah. All right, yeah.
I it's just like...
Yeah, certainly debate it and talk about it. Nothing to get angry about.
Oh, people,
It's a nice tool to have in your toolbox, like being able to play a D&D-like game, because there's a lot of easy buy-in.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it seems likely you're going to get into a fight.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, if I'm not going to have fights in my game, then why am I playing a D&D?
I agree. I would be really upset, actually, if I... Because I'm playing a fighter in my current D&D campaign, and I've got really cool combat stuff I've done. And if we played a load of sessions and I never got a combat, I'd be like... Yeah. I don't get to use my cool toys.
Well, especially if you're a fighter.
Yeah.
It's like playing a baker and never getting to make a pie. It's just, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a fighter. I want to fight.
I've been in games.
That's the reason my character exists.
Yeah. I'm having great fun hacking and slashing and doing that. And D&D is a really... Well, we're technically using Level Up A5E, but never mind. But that's the right system for telling that side of the story. I'm a big hero. Mm. I'm running around on vanquishing foes. And I feel very cool. And it's good for that.
Well, I mean, we've got, like, stuff to do. Like, if it's all combat, it's going to be terrible. But, yeah, that is what it is.
Oh, yeah, but...
I would also be somewhat miffed if I never got a chance to do anything cool. Or if there's, like, oh, we're on a ship. As has happened to me in several games, but because I went last in the initiative track, I didn't get to fight anything.
Oh.
I'm like, oh. Or even better, I go last, I miss, and then before the second round is over, that's it.
Yeah.
That's just like,
unexciting. That's a lot of thing. But that was a thing that happened this week on social media. People were talking about what Brennan Lee Mulligan said.
Okay. We've got some D&D Beyond news.
What's beyond the Dungeons & Dragons?
Two D&D Beyond newses.
Tell me about them.
Two of them. So the first D&D Beyond news is, and this is interesting because it goes back to what we were talking about a little earlier about the move to digital.
Okay.
Because both of these are linked to that.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one is, on D&D Beyond, you can pick up a free copy of Descent into the Lost Caverns of Sojanth, or however you pronounce that word, which is one of the adventures in Quests from the Infinite Staircase.
All right.
It's an abridged version, apparently. It's not as long as the one in there, but I've had a look at it, and it's, you know, it's a very sizable dungeon. And, it's fairly substantial, and it's free. So you can pop over there and get that. 4 to 6 ninth level characters.
Okay.
And they call it an abridged quick play version, but the full adventures in Quests, which, when does that come out? It's
In the summer. Quests
from the Infinite Staircase is July the 16th, yeah. So that's that. You want to pop along and get that. So that's a PDF of that. But also, over on Kickstarter, the Kickstarter for Monsters of Drakenheim, which is from the Dungeon Dudes, who made a couple of $1 million Kickstarters in that Drakenheim line.
Good for them.
And this one looks like it's going to be a third one.
Mm-hmm.
Is advertising D&D Beyond support as there on the Kickstarter.
Interesting. Tell me more.
Yeah. So we know that Wizards has been including some third-party products on D&D Beyond for a while now. So there's stuff from Ghostfire Gaming. The Dungeon Dudes here, they've got another Drakenheim book on there. I think Kerbal Press has one now, and there's Critical Role one. So there's various ones. So this is the first time I've ever seen it on a Kickstarter for a product that doesn't yet exist.
So what do you get? What's as part of the Kickstarter? They say the content will be on D&D Beyond and you will have paid access to it already.
So it's an add-on, $35, or it's included in some of the tiers, I think, the pledge tiers. So you could buy the hardcover, you could buy the PDF, or you could buy the
digital package.
Interesting. It's a monster book, 150 monsters, all eldritch horror stuff. Big old Kickstarter. They work closely with Ghostfire Gaming a lot. They always have all those dice and minis and pins and bookmarks and dice bags and plushies and all that stuff that pushes it up to the million.
They'll be absolutely enormous. They're playing a different game, mate.
Yeah, it's interesting. So that just, I think, you know, that certainly speaks to the way Wizards is clearly making a long-term part. These aren't one-offs. These are long-term partnerships with third parties.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To put third-party content on D&D Beyond. Because, you know, this isn't them going to someone and saying, oh, you've got that great product. How would you like to put it on D&D Beyond? This is something that doesn't even exist yet.
So they've gone to them, pitched it, and said, hey, we're going to be making this. We're crowdfunding. Can we commit to having this on your site and we can include that in the crowdfunding?
Yeah.
I mean, look, if I rephrase this in more, like, business language, maybe that will help. But often companies like, say, Boeing, went and outsourced a whole bunch of their designs for planes. Maybe thinking, isn't that your job, Boeing? And I'd largely agree, yes. But it's like, if you outsource things, then you don't have to pay to keep on designers and so forth. So rather than having to design adventures, and adventure books, like, they're not the best sellers, are they? Like, you know, they do all right.
Yeah.
But if someone else, if you can pay someone else to do it and then take a cut, that's so much cheaper than having your own in-house production. Yeah, so it's like, I mean,
and premise of D&D Beyond, isn't it?
Yeah, and Wizards Coast has always depended upon massive amounts of third-party support. That's how it is where it is now. And like, so now it's just drawing up the drawbridge and going with its trusted partners who it believes will provide enough support for it to go. There you go.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It makes perfect business sense. I mean, it's not going to be very popular, obviously, but with, like, you know, long-term gamers and game designers, but, you know, That's not Wizards of the Coast's problem. That's not Hasbro's problem. That's our problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting piece of news. Thank you for sharing that. I'm going to consider this in my brain before speaking more upon it.
Okay.
And it may take some time for that to happen.
Allow it to percolate.
I will. I might. So next week, if I bring this up, that's why, because I've had thoughts. But right now I'm just brewing them, and it takes a while.
Fair enough.
For my brain to, you know...
I have a piece of news which will take us from the very large to the slightly smaller.
I love that. More local. Let's do look at that.
Yeah, I've just put in the show notes a rather nice little $5 book that's come out called Paradigms of Skill, Expanded Skill Criticals.
Interesting. Tell me more.
And this is from Jesse over at Plant Rich Press. And what this is in Advanced 5th Edition, we've got the concept of criticals, which is when you have a natural 20 and you succeeded anyway, and critical failures, where you roll a 1, but you would have failed anyway. So that makes a critical failure. And it's like it's a bunch of tables. So this, so in the main books, there's not a complete set for everything, which, reasons of space, I understand. It's like a new little subsystem. So what Jessie's done is she said, this shall not pass, and has filled in the gaps. So now for every single skill that doesn't already have something in print, you can now have a critical success and a critical failure table.
And that's something you can easily just move into your 5e games as well.
Yeah, let's say it's designed for level up like, A5e, but this could easily be 5e as well.
It's like, honestly, this is, it's $5. If you can find a cup of coffee for $5 somewhere, let me know, because my coffee's too expensive. I have to make my own at home. This is like...
I love how people say cup of coffee now. It's like, who's buying coffee regularly?
Who's got that kind of money? You got coffee money? We've got coffee at home.
All right, Jeffrey Bezos with your Costa coffees and your...
So like I say, I mean, I would think twice if this was $10, but at $5, I'm like, thanks. My nail.
It hasn't been reviewed or rated yet as well, so I might download this and...
It's brand new, isn't it? So, I think like skill criticals and stuff, like,
I forgot to mention it on last week's podcast, which I can only apologise because I have heard about it, but we just had so much stuff to go through.
Last week was wild.
Oh, yeah! We've got expanded skill critical.
You could just like add that. Yeah, you could just add them into any. You could add them into any D20 based
game.
If you roll a 20 and you would have succeeded it, so it's not every time you roll a 20. It's one roll a 20 and you've succeeded.
That's the A5E version. Yeah.
I mean, that stops it being like one in every 20 rolls this happens.
Some people like the chaos of having crits and fumbles.
It's not so bad as combat with fumbles, because critical fumbles in combat punishes people with more attacks.
Yeah, so, absolutely. I don't often say you're playing it wrong, but if you're playing it like that, you're playing it wrong, and you're just basically saying to me specifically, PJ, go play a bard and make all your spells saving throws, because then that makes it someone else's problem, which I'm entirely happy to do. But I would want to be playing a fighter. I'd want to be playing some sort of martial class. And if you have critical fumble, you're basically saying, think again. I'm like, okay, I'll play a halfling. Like I say, this is a really nice product.
Looking at this.
Yeah.
Because it's about to be April, and then that means my TTRPG budget resets.
Is that how it works?
I give myself a budget for spending on games, because otherwise... Because with work, I see so many cool things. I want to get them all. And after a few months of working at EM Publishing full-time, I realised that was an unsustainable... That became an unsustainable thing. So I now have a budget for myself per month, and I'm like, okay... And I think about it, if I see something I really like and I'm still thinking about a month later, you know, I can go get it then. So,
Like I say, and certainly if you've already bought a copy, well played to you if you have, then do feel free to drop a star rating or like a thing.
Because that helps other people see it.
Yeah.
Oh, up ahead, I see something.
I felt a shiver go down my spine.
So whose idea was it to spoil the haunted woods of Clemency again?
Oh, never mind that. There's definitely something here.
Oh, in the shadows there, between the trees.
Oh, it looks like a person, but
Hello.
By Gorak's axe, the dead walk among us.
Well, more like float.
What is your purpose in the haunted woods of Clemency?
Oh, we're adventurers.
Many adventurers have walked these trails. Few have returned.
Oh, do you mean us ill, friend ghost?
I have waited here for 100 years.
Waited for what? For hapless victims that you may drain their life force?
Or worse.
Worse? What's worse than having your life force drained?
I don't know, having it drained slowly?
Right, yeah, that is worse.
I seek not your life force, tasty though it is. All I desire is to pass from this plane to the next life.
Well, I mean, don't let us stop you.
Sadly, I cannot do so until my unfinished business is complete.
Your unfinished business?
Oh, I know this. Ghosts are trapped here until their affairs in this world are resolved. We need to complete some kind of task which will release our new friend into the afterlife.
You are correct. Once my tasks are complete, I shall be released from this cursed existence.
Oh, well, then we shall gladly help you.
Wait, hang on.
What is it?
You said tasks, plural.
Yes.
How many tasks are we talking?
Well, you see, I'm not entirely sure which one.
Right.
So, I made a list.
You made a list?
It has to be one of them.
Fine. Give us your list and... we shall do our best to free you.
You have my eternal gratitude.
Well, you know, spit it out then.
It is definitely one of these.
God, we'll be ghosts too if this takes much longer.
Right. So, I left the stove on.
You left the stove on?
That is just the first item.
Oh, right. Well, pray continue. Friend Ghost, what else is unresolved? Other than, you know, the stove.
I have not paid the milkman.
Are they all this tedious?
Now, friend fighter. Unfinished business is unfinished business.
It is not like I wrote the rules.
Oh, very well. Okay, so stove, milkman, what else?
It is... quite a long list, you know.
How long?
white, long.
Okay, can you narrow it down a bit?
The cosmos does not really give clues as to what it considers important.
Okay, so what else is there?
Return my libraries throughout the moldy cheese. Feed the fish. Return Uncle Keith's telegram about his blocked chimney. Avenge the death of my family, friends, and plan. Fix that leaky roof. Empty the bins. Quit smoking. Finish the 9 that she's crossword. Clear out
wait,
the...
Wait. Just hang on there.
I still have many to go.
Yeah, but rewind a bit. What did you say?
Return my library books. Throw out the moldy cheese. Feed the fish. Return Uncle Keith's telegram about his blocked chimney. Avenge death for my family, friends, and clan. Fix that leaky roof. Empty the...
Yeah, that's it. Stop.
Empty the bin.
No, before that.
The
No, before that.
Avenge the death for my family, friends, and clan.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one.
Are you sure? How do you know?
Well, one of these things is not like the others.
I suppose it is kind of hard to maintain perspective when you have been dead for 100 years. Feed the fish, avenge the death of my family, friends, and clan, return the library books. It all kind of merges into one after a while.
Well, tell us, what happened?
Oh, well, I suppose I put them on a shelf and sort of forgot about them.
Your family?
No. The library books.
I meant, what happened to your family?
Oh, right. Well, my entire village was slain by a necromancer, you know.
Well, not really.
But if we can defeat this necromancer, your spirit will be free to move on.
Tell us his name. We'll hunt him down.
It was a long time ago. I think he was calling himself Kevin back then.
Kevin the Necromancer.
Everyone has got to start somewhere. He came up with some fancy, flashy name later on. Malachi Darkbane, Lucius Grimspell. Or Israbor, Architect of Death, or Grimraven, the Dread Plague Bearer. Something like that.
And you don't remember the name at all?
Oh, yes. It's called The Secret History of the Eastern Reaches. I found it a little dry, honestly.
The Necromancer, not the library book.
Oh, sorry. Let me think. He started calling himself the Lord of Bones, or something. Something about warning, something or other.
You don't mean Baron Victor von Necrosis, the Bone Lord, Warden of the Damned?
Yes, that's it. That is a fella.
What, the necrotic tyrant who brought ruin to the Third World? The one they call the Soulbinder, Dread Sovereign of the Underworld? Who conquered every land he saw, assimilating all before him into his zombie army?
Gone up in the world, has he?
So, where'd you say those library books were?
Malak the Maleficent here. If, like me, you're enjoying this podcast, please consider subscribing on Patreon for exclusive bonus content every week and the warm, fuzzy feeling of knowing you are helping to keep the show going. Subscribe at patreon.com/Morris. There, I said it. Can you stop staring at me like that now? The things I do. All right. Don't forget... Patreon.com/Morris. Can I go now?
Right. More news.
Yes.
Ooh. I have news.
Really?
Give me the news.
It may contradict PJ's assertion earlier that people don't read books.
You found someone who read a book.
I mean,
well, no, but they have.
I'd be delighted to be wrong.
There is a book that has been published, a book of fiction, a novel, if you will.
Has anyone read it?
Probably.
A fiction book. I'll put it on the list.
But, you know, if you like D&D lore, so there's a new novel, The Dungeons and Dragons, The Fallbacks, Bound for Ruin. So it's part of the Forgotten Realms fiction book line. And it's got a new group of adventurers, which are called The Fallbacks.
The Fallbacks?
Yep.
Yes.
All right.
I don't know.
Jale Johnson, in answer to your question there.
Sorry?
I think it's pronounced Jale. I'm saying that like Raleigh, but with a J at the beginning.
But anyway. I haven't read it myself, so perhaps PJ is correct that people don't read books. But you know who has read it is Beth Rimmels, who's done a review of it on EM World. So there is one person who has read a book. I haven't read any of the Dungeons & Dragons, you know, fiction books or anything. So I don't know.
I used to. Oh,
are they good?
When TSR did them back in the day. Mm-hmm. Nothing in the last 20-plus years. But
I read things like the Dragonlance Chronicles.
Oh, I've read the new Dragonlance ones, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's not even the recent stuff, but I've read the old ones. Mm. I had no idea they were related to D&D.
Fair enough.
Because you wouldn't. They don't have a D&D logo on them, do they?
No, they just say Dragonlance. I'm like, this is a really cool universe. Mm. Curiously specific about some things, but sure.
Well, this one very much does have Dungeons and Dragons emblazoned upon the cover.
The logo is very clear in this
one. Yeah, absolutely. I read things like The Forgotten Shard and stuff.
Mm.
I'm not saying, by the way, that nobody reads any books whatsoever. Mm. That might be what we call hyperbole, because I know many people associated tend to take things extremely literally. So if you have read a book at all, then I'm clearly not talking about you, Emily.
Anyway. I think you were.
Okay.
You're just backpedaling.
I'm saying people who have read books do not read books. That is definitely the nonsensical statement that I made.
And that will be the headline. There's the clickbait headline.
That's the snippet we're going to take out of there. In fact, we're just going to take out the rest of the podcast and just leave that sentence in. That's all we need now.
Okay, okay.
Look, there we go. We have consent.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway,
consent
so this,
what happens next.
This book people may or may not have read.
Mm-hmm.
Beth
has read.
I'm pretty sure Beth Rimmels has.
Yes.
I believe in Beth. She's
It's about a group of adventurers, a brand new group of adventurers. They're based out of Waterdeep.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to go and do adventure-y things. They have to go and get a spell book from a lost temple. And there's a warrior, a wizard, a dwarf cleric, and a flamboyant bard.
A flamboyant bard? Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm spoilery to say much more to it than that. But, you know, it's a start in a new series, apparently. Mm. First in a new series featuring these guys. They're called the Fallbacks. Mm-hmm. Is their adventuring party name.
But yeah.
And no, I haven't read it. So
I don't have a lot to say about it, but it is a piece of news that happened this week, and there is a review up on EM World if you're interested in such things and want to know more about it.
Yeah.
Oh, would people be interested in going and playing role playing games in a castle?
I mean, some people are, clearly.
Which role playing game?
Yeah.
There's all sorts at Chepstow Castle. They have Dice on the Borderlands.
Oh, this isn't the big D&D one they do.
This isn't the £3,000.
This isn't D&D in a castle, no.
Yeah.
This isn't the $3,000 D&D gang of flyover. This is just like there are some people who live in Monmouthshire in Wales near Chepstow Castle, and on the 27th of April, they will be running role-playing games there.
Nice.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I am interested in that, because it sounds like there's a whole array of different tabletop games.
Is it just a one-day convention sort of thing?
It's a one-day convention. It's about 2-2.5 hours from Southampton, about the same from London or Birmingham, but it is games in the castle.
And that they're Wales,
yeah.
which is where that their Jess came from.
Mm, lots of castles there.
Yeah,
it's big symbols of English oppression.
Yeah, it's a solid 7 hours of gaming with a 6 hours of gaming with breakfast or lunch with informal social gatherings on Friday and Saturday evenings. So there you go. If you wish to go to Chepstow and play role-playing games in a castle, it does look like a legit castle, then it's a little mini convention for you.
That sounds very cool. I do like that.
It does sound very cool.
Thank you.
I'd love to go and run stuff there, but I'm just trying to my diary. Anyway.
Dare I mention AI in... I don't know if we talked about this already.
Oh, that's what I was about to say. But okay, you can.
I will. Go. Okay. So dare I mention AI in tabletop RPG? on this podcast. No. But as we know,
you may dare.
We talked about it a little bit previously.
Dare
before,
away.
But suffice to say, the use of AI in tabletop RPG space is controversial.
Specifically, generative AI. To be fair,
yeah, not any AI.
Oh yeah. Yes, that's what
I meant. A bit of autocorrect would probably help things in many respects, but yeah.
Well, yes, thanks for the clarification. But and there's been some controversies with Hasbro, you know, with art being used and things like that. And but there have been some recent interviews with Chris Cox, who is the CEO of Hasbro.
Mm-hmm.
Rhymes. That was very satisfying to say. But yeah, in summary, they let us know that Dungeons & Dragons is exploring how they can use it in the future. And we don't have any specific... They haven't specifically said, we're going to do this. Mm. But...
They haven't said they're going to take all their art assets and feed them into a generative AI in order to generate further art.
They have not said that. A quote I can give you that has been said is from Chris Cox, CEO of Hasbro, we're trying to do a new AI product experiment once every 2 to 3 months. You'll see more of how we're thinking about how we can integrate AI, how we can integrate digital with physical gaming over time. I think most major entertainment and IP holders are at least thinking about it.
Mm.
And they have said other things as well, which I think you are looking at, Russ.
Because he starts talking about the open game license.
Mm-hmm.
It says, for 20 plus years that the open game license has been in existence for something like D&D, I think that gives us a lot of experience to navigate what will emerge with AI and just generally the development of user-based content platforms. So I'm not sure that's specifically what he's saying, but it sounds to me like he's saying that I mean, I'm reading between the lines here. The data sources for any AI they use will be the stuff that people have released via the open game license over the last 20 years. Is that what that means?
Well,
that's what I took away from it.
Did we mention last week when if you put your thing on the D&D platform, what's it called, where you can sell your own stuff? I've forgotten it.
DM's Guild.
Yeah, DM's Guild. Isn't there an agreement now that you say... They like own it or something like. Am I making this up?
So there's always been.
Okay.
It's not new, but there's always been, and this predates AI completely.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there's always been a sort of share alike provision to it.
That's what. Yes.
So you put something on DM's Guild, other people on DM's Guild can use it, and so can wizards.
Yeah.
But I don't know the exact conditions. I don't know the exact terms of that.
Okay.
But that's just kind of the broad overview.
Okay.
But that does kind of indicate that possibly that includes AI because.
Yeah, I mean, if wizards are allowed to use it, then they've been given permission to use it. So if you were going to train, you know, a computer to make adventures, you'd say, here is all the adventures we have legal right to use.
I'm just looking at the actual conditions of the license, the thing where you
put
stuff on there.
I don't know. This is me just speculating. This is pure speculation.
Yeah.
Nobody sue me.
But, yeah, I mean, if it basically sort of says that wizards can use the content that you put on there for any purpose.
Then, yeah, that would come under the any category, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. There's a full article in EN World that Mike Treska's gone through, but in it, reading between the lines because they haven't publicly said these are our plans for things we're going to do.
It does talk about stuff that they've made themselves, though. They just said, like, D&D's got 50 years of content that they've made themselves.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know, thousands of adventures, tens of millions of words.
Uh-huh.
Magic the Gathering has also been around for 35 years, so there's over 15,000 cards there.
Mm.
And then he talks about Peppa Pig and Transformers and other stuff they own. But what they're saying is that Hasbro itself does own a lot of content.
Mm-hmm.
Enough, I guess, what you're saying is enough to feed into...
A training model of some sort.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's exactly what is meant there. But in my mind, that just means that Hasbro's then not going to be making new stuff. They're just going to be regurgitating old stuff over and over again sort of thing.
Or maybe just use that to train something to make new stuff, because if something can spot...
Yeah, but the stuff won't be new, will it? AI doesn't make new stuff, it regurgitates old stuff, so...
Any new ideas? New ideas? Are all creative concepts just regurgitated?
Well, yeah. I think I could certainly argue that humans are capable of creativity, though.
Yeah, but why would we do that? We should outsource it to the robots so we can do the uninteresting jobs.
Yeah, I mean, those spreadsheets are fun creative jobs. Then. That should be for people, not... Wait.
They've got it the wrong way around, haven't they?
They
it's like, AI should be doing the rubbish jobs and we should be doing the fun jobs. It's the other way around.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even capable of doing the fun jobs either.
Yet.
Sure.
That's the thing. It doesn't have to do it. It just has to create enough of an illusion of doing it that it satisfies the majority of use cases.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
It's like airport paperbacks, something. It doesn't have to be.
I'll tell you what it's like. It's like putting radioactive stuff into things. Like, what do you call it? During the atomic age, it was like radiation goes and everything. Uranium glasses,
and to a
certain extent, things. Yeah. Yes, luminescent makeup, which resulted in massive cases of jaw cancer. I'm not saying AI will give you massive cases of jaw cancer, but they've got people we can use it to detect. All sorts of cancers. Yeah, sure. I mean, you can use AI to help screen in things like skin cancer. But the first couple of drafts of AI, right? What they showed was the presence of rulers because it doesn't know what it's looking at. And every time you have someone says this is confirmed cancerous, they put that into training data. And it would normally have a ruler beside it because it had been confirmed cancerous, and that's one of the things they do. So they end up with AI trained to detect rulers. So,
What will they do with this power? Are they going to take our rulers? Is this?
Yeah, sure. Okay. I'm just saying.
No, they're going to subtly alter our rulers so that all our measurements are slightly wrong.
Will this make me believe I'm taller?
Maybe.
Or shorter.
Oh.
Possibly depending both. On the alteration.
Darn.
I'm saying is there's a lot of people saying, AI is inevitable, AI is going to come. And currently, it's having some court cases which are going to hinge on their case being, pretty please, can we not have copyright affect our business plan?
AI
and that's a bold strategy.
I think AI is inevitable. It's just how it's manifested is not the inevitability.
AI in its current form is definitely not inevitable.
Not in its current form, no.
Yeah, and people try to tell you otherwise. I'll definitely try to tell you something. Probably their new AI, quote, solution, unquote, has how it's going to fix stuff. Like, you got Bard from Google giving hilariously wrong results. So it's like, it's not a search engine. It's a large language model. It's computationally expensive. All people are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, sorry. I'm going to get off my horse.
No, that's fair enough. I poked the bear. I brought up AI in tabletop RPGs on the podcast.
And you knew what would happen.
I did.
You knew what the consequences would be.
I just like really environmentally polluting bad ideas, which are no real use case.
Why, PJ? Sorry. Why would you be unhappy about that? That seems...
Well, let's talk about something
else.
I'm not sure if it's cool or not, but it definitely caught my eye.
Okay.
Oh, tell us all.
So, imagine miniatures.
Right.
But instead of a miniature, you've got a little stand... Which you can upload artwork or a little digital stand with LED screens on either side of it. You can upload artwork to of your character, and that's your miniature.
That's cool.
And also, it's got a teeny little speaker in it, and you can have it make sounds. Like if you've got a fighter, you can have it make like sword clashing sounds, or if you got a wizard, you can make it have like spell casty sounds.
That feels gimmicky good fun.
Yeah, I mean...
I'm not disinterested. Tell me more. Well,
because you can make a spaceship that makes pew-pew noises. This is good gimmicky fun.
We've got the use case.
So this is on Kickstarter at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
Let me give you...
Please give me the link, because my budget resets in April.
You can see it. They're not cheap, though.
Oh, they're not? Oh. Expect this to be cheap because it sounds on like there's a lot of...
Kickstarter, they're about $160 per mini. And the eventual retail price will apparently be closer to like $280 per mini.
Russ.
But the thing is, you only need like a small number of minis, and then you don't need a mini for every monster. Yeah, you just tell it, okay, I want this to be a goblin and I want this to be a...
Yeah. Russ, I mentioned it's my birthday?
They're smashing it on the fun thing.
It's gone well.
What do you think, though? What do you think?
I like that concept. It seems cool, good, gimmicky fun.
It's like your character's been eaten by a gelatinous cube.
Well, I don't like the look of them, because they look a bit like advertising standees rather
than
miniatures. But I guess they've got to put the technology in the bottom bit down there, I guess.
I'm excited for the development of this technology, because as we know, technology is going to get smaller and smaller, because that's what keeps happening.
Yeah, when it shrinks so that it's more image.
When it's like a clear plastic standee.
I could see how this could be quite interesting, because it's got the old... okay, so obviously battery powered. So you could change and have your character like be moving and doing stuff.
Yeah, animated, yeah. I mean, I don't know that this does that, but that's certainly an evolution of the way that can go.
Yeah, I mean, there's... Obviously, I think it's the secondary market for these things, which go absolutely berserk. Mm. So, like, you know, druids wild shaping into different forms. Like doppelgangers. Mm.
Asimar
transformations.
I said I wasn't going to... But I can't. I want these, but I don't know if I want them that much. To pay that much for them, because they're not cheap. Yeah,
It'll be extra as well to get stuff. But yeah, I mean,
only works for size medium creatures
currently.
And we've only got the one size thing, but you can imagine that expanding to different sizes.
That's a lot of creatures.
True. Yeah. But you can't like do a size large creature or anything, but you know, well, for player characters, it's most player characters, to be fair.
Proof concept.
I like this concept a lot, and I'm excited to see where it goes in the future. Yeah. Is my
see what we want is it to be holographic.
I do.
It's basically a little round base you put there, and it goes comes out. That'd be amazing.
Episode 4 holograms.
Yeah.
Help me, Star Wars. You help,
but in full color.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I like this. I'm not sure I'll get this, because that would eat up a large amount of my budget.
And I wonder how... Because you kind of need multiple ones as well.
Yeah, the full table, the six...
You can't run a game with just one.
Yeah, so there's a stack of six, and that is $700 at 45% off, which is just... If I had $700 to spend on tabletop RPG stuff, I don't know if this is where I'd put it.
Yeah.
Maybe if you got the rest of it, like you got all the little plastic walls and you got several layers and you got the table. Yeah. This could be what you need to finish off your collection.
I think this would be great in a sci-fi game if you had one and you had some sort of, you got your missions from your boss who came on a screen to talk to you and you had the minis and this popped down and you could talk through it. Like,
it would be quicker if you could like make your mini get more and more injured looking as your hit points go down as well.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
As you went up in levels or changed things, like, yeah, there's a lot of possibilities you could add to this.
Yeah.
But getting it done at an affordable price is definitely where it's going to struggle.
Yeah.
But clearly there's enough people that want to jump in at the beginning of it and fund.
Yeah, early adopters often pay more for
things, don't they? And there are plenty of them. So there's over 1,000 people that have gone to this. Yeah. So
I think it's too expensive for me.
$110. What more do you want?
Yeah. I think it is too much for me now.
Oof, and the charging base.
I could sort of see
extra.
Like in a few years when these are cheaper and stuff.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I think I'm going to keep an eye on this technology because I really like the idea of this. Oh, and I love someone on the crowdfunding page just said, I want something for HeroQuest to use this. And I was like, yes. Love that. Someone's thinking about HeroQuest and using it there.
I love the way they sort of like announce on the Kickstarter that it's compatible with D&D and Pathfinder and Numenera. So it's like... What does...
what's compatibility mean in
this
case? What
does an image mean for... Compatibility. It's like,
yeah, I found that
it's a picture of a character. It's compatible with every RPG, surely.
Maybe just giving people ideas, maybe that's what it's about. You know, it's giving you ideas. But
maybe
sorry
to pour a bit cold water on this idea, but they're talking about the charging cables because it appears to be unique. So if you pay an extra $50, you can get the charging case, which does use USB-C, but otherwise, it's currently a proprietary or unique cable, so
good.
It's
I love having different cables for all my different tech pieces.
Why do people do that? Why?
Makes me super happy.
Would you like to see a Kobold Press White from Tales of the Valiant?
Yeah, right.
Okay, let me show you one then. Here you go, one white. So this is from their monster book, and this is what a white is going to look like, so you can get an idea of where they're going with their Tales of the Valiant monsters.
Spelled W-I-G-H-T for those.
Yes, yes, Wigert.
A Wigert.
Yeah,
yeah. Wigert. Yeah, Wigert. You just pronounced it wrong. Yeah.
Okay, so what I'm seeing is a person that's like an archer.
Yeah.
They've got a tattered green cloak. Looks like they've got a cuirbouillie, pressed leather armour, got some pouches, obviously. Got swords stuck in the ground beside them, and a bow in surprisingly good nick.
And they have,
down to the last three arrows.
And they have undeady white, grey.
If you look at the stat block.
It's all grey skin. Oh, stat block.
This is the important thing. It's the words that are the important bit, not the picture.
CL3.
So yeah, this is a Tales of the Valiant White, the stats for. Off the top of my head, I can't remember what a 5e white looks like, so I'm gonna look it up quickly just to compare the two side by side. So white on D&D Beyond there. So where are we? So CR3, both the same. You notice they haven't got ability scores. They've just got the modifiers there.
Yeah.
Which is what Pathfinder's doing. I didn't realise that Tales of the Valiant was doing that. But
I will look forward to seeing the way that they're handling jumping and encumbrance.
Okay. Yeah.
Because, yeah.
Is their player's book out yet?
No.
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 Not as far as I'm aware. I mean, a lot of people talk about it, and it's like, that's nice.
So the weight is very, very similar to the 5e one. A few like differences, like numerically. So it's a little tougher, I think. What I notice it does have is some bonus actions which are kind of leader-like.
Yeah.
So it's about how they command allied skeletons and zombies.
Command horde.
Ooh. Yeah, and they can get them to protect, overwhelm, or shamble, which the core 5e white doesn't have.
No.
So other than that, it's very similar. Very similar. But
I like that bonus action, that's cool.
Yeah.
That could make some tactical combat, because then you'd want to take this dude down before you start on the other undead, just so they're less...
Yeah. So they can have friendly skeletons or zombies throw themselves in to intercept attacks when you attack it. Mm. They could get them to overwhelm a target so that they get advantage on attack rolls against the creature.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, shamble, just move. We can just use its bonus to get the skeletons or zombies to use their reaction to move their speed.
If it gets attacked, then disadvantage. If it takes an opportunity attack, then disadvantage on that attack.
Yeah.
That significantly ups the threat of a white, in my opinion.
Yeah. So what we've got streamlined statistics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it looks like, you know, obviously we look at something like this because like Tales of the Valiant and our own game, Level Up Advanced Edition, kind of occupy same sort of space, yet they're both doing different things. Which is interesting. So they're both positioned as an alternative to 5e, but still 5e.
Yeah, yeah.
But like Level Up goes more crunchy.
Yes.
Whereas Tales of the Valiant goes more streamlined.
Yeah.
That's the kind of choices each of those two games has made.
Yeah.
From the core 5e sort of midline, I guess.
Let's try and go more streamlined than this edition.
Yes. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Well, I don't know, more streamlined than 1D&D, new 2040, because that's more streamlined as well, isn't
there's
it?
A lot of people that want that as well, I think.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
So it's good people have options.
I look forward to finding out more.
Yeah.
But I quite like those little bonus actions, they are quite darling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice drain.
The rest of it looks reasonably familiar, so.
Yeah, I mean, they're not.
But those bonus actions, like you mentioned, that looks like a cool.
Yeah, they do hue very close to 5e. So just they just DIP it, as it were, DOGLify it. But they do hue very, very close to 5e.
Mm. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. Right. What else have we got in the news? Or are we out of news? Are we done?
I believe I'm done. So
I've only got one last little piece, which is
okay.
Green Ronin have published or released the Fantasy Age Quick Start for the second edition of Adventure Game Engine. So that's on DriveThruRPG. So it's got a streamlined version of the rules, obviously, so it's not the full rule set. But so if you want to check out the second edition and see what the changes are, that free Quick Start is on DriveThruRPG to download. It also comes with some pre-generated characters and an adventure. So I think it's a nice little onboarding freebie as well if you've not tried it, or if you... I used to first edition, want to see what second edition is all about. It's also there.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know much about Fantasy Age, to be honest. So
One last thing, a little thing I've been working on.
Ooh.
in between editing Void Runners Codex and stuff, when I get like overwhelmed with doing that and I want to stop and do something else, I do something else with Void Runners Codex. I'm building a starship builder for it.
Oh,
I'll give you a sneak preview of it.
Ooh,
shiny.
Salut.
I've been making this in between editing. There we go. That link works.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a work in progress still. It still doesn't do everything, but it's getting there. It is getting there.
Oh, cool. So you can make your little spaceship. So it'll be an online tool.
Yep. You choose its size, you choose its type, you choose its propulsion, shields, what decks it has, additional systems and weapons. Hit the build it button, and it makes a stat block for your spaceship.
Oh.
It's quite exciting. Because a starship in Void Runner's Codex is a stronghold.
Yeah.
As we have in the Adventurer's Guide, but a bit more detailed.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you've got a stronghold in D&D, you can't fly it around usually and attack other strongholds with it.
Well, we had an argument on the Starcross... Not an argument, that's the wrong word. On the Starcross Seaway that the pirate ship became a stronghold.
Well, there is a ship stronghold... Mm-hmm. Type in Gatepass Gazette somewhere.
So you could technically.
So it does exist.
Take that and attack someone else's stronghold with your stronghold.
Yeah, true. Yeah, fair.
But yeah, no, this obviously Voidrunners expands on that and yeah.
Mm.
Cool.
Yeah.
Looking forward to seeing that. So that's Voidrunners will be coming out later this summer. Mm. Yeah. But right now, Planestrider's Journal is still live, so we're still doing that.
Yeah, still got another 6 days to go, I think, on that one. Yep.
So we'll be...
And it is at £68,000.
This time next week, everyone will have the PDF that's backed it as well.
Lovely.
Mm. So I'll be up on Thursday evening.
Yeah, we've got exactly 1,000 backers right now, actually. 1,000 exactly at this very moment.
That's very satisfying, a nice round number.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Maybe we should stop there. We don't want any more backers now.
No, 1,000 is enough. Not. Thank you.
I'm pretty sure you do.
As your business manager, I'm going to advise you not to say 1, that.
1,000. We can have 1,000 or 2,000, but nothing in between.
Okay, fine. We'll go for the 2,000 then.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. On that note.
Right, I think we're done, aren't we?
I think we are done.
Apparently, I now have to read this to you. This is the official podcast of Morris's unofficial tabletop RPG news, which you can find at enworld.org. You can find show notes at morris.podbean.com or wherever you found the podcast. If you feel like they deserve it, you can support the show on Patreon. In return, you will receive exclusive bonus content. Just go to patreon.com/Morris. If you're interested in his babbling nonsense, you can follow @Morris on the Twitter. Send your emails to morrispodcast@gmail.com. Not all of your emails, just the ones you want us to see. That's it. I'm bored now. You can go away. Shoo, off you go. Goodbye. Get out of here.
It's got a lot of weapon mounts and AI and all sorts. See, this is the sort of AI I approve of in role-playing games. You use it to pilot the ship.
Hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. I'm happy with that.
Yes. See, I'm quite happy with Knight Rider as an AI.
Yep. No problem with Kit.
That's the type of AI I like. Kit is fine. Kit is A-okay in my book. Jessica has no idea what we're talking about.
I know what Knight Rider is.
Oh, do you?
Yeah,
oh,
okay. It's the talking car with, is it David Hasselhoff?
Yes. Michael Knight, a lone crusader in a dangerous world.
Yeah, I know. I was born in the 80s.